This is an interview with Governor Victor Attia at his office in downtown Portland. The interviewer for the Oregon Historical Society is Clark Hansen. The date is 2/1/93, and this is tape 19, side A.
Well, we were talking about the plaintiff's attorneys and the fact that he really couldn't get any law tightening things done. But it was, with the exception of 8 years, Democrats have 8 years in the House, and still today in the Senate, the Democrats have controlled since 1955. And, you know, they are more liberally oriented, and oftentimes, well, Judiciary Committee would have a lawyer on it, and there just wasn't any way to get through what it would, you know, I would consider some pretty tough laws. So, still that way, trying to get something through that would be, make common sense, make sense, but still would be a law that would really not give them, meaning the criminal, the advantages that plaintiff's attorneys wanted.
There was a new issue that came up for the legislature in terms of the environment, which is still prevalent today, and that's, I don't know about the state legislature, but nationally, a bill was passed that prohibits the sale of aerosols containing fluorocarbons, which scientists said would threaten the ultraviolet ray shielding ozone layer. And this, I believe, was the first time that the legislature had dealt with this issue.
Yeah.
What kind of debate was there on this, and where did you stand? Wasn't the theory about this a little more controversial at this point?
This was controversial, yeah. It was sort of a bottle bill kind of controversy, not quite as much. The I can't recall how I voted. I can remember. I can tell you how I generally felt in terms of protecting the environment. There were many times things that I thought ought to happen, but you have to do it in a way that would actually be productive. Arguments would be like, it takes industry quite a while to convert or find something else that would accommodate the consumer. The consumer kind of liked this spray business. And so to find something that they could sell, the other one argument was that Oregon has about 1% of the population of the United States. What Oregon does really isn't going to change the rest of the nation. And some of these companies that say, hey, we don't need the 1%, we can deal with the 99% of the rest of the nation. And so again, it might work to the disadvantage of the American, the Oregon consumer. Those are the arguments on the other side of the issue. The same thing happened when we got into water storage and we were going to pass laws in regard to the kind of toilets you could put in houses and a whole lot of them. There's a repeat, depends on, but it's the same things. You got to get to have time to prepare for it, and the argument that Oregon's 1% and they could write us off and not even know they'd missed any sales. But still, as a matter of conscience, you know, whether or not we are in danger, somebody's got to start somewhere. Certainly, if we stop doing it, it isn't going to change the ozone. Nobody, the ozone isn't even going to know it. But maybe if we do it, others will do the same. So that's the other side.
What wasn't that argument also used, though, in the bottle bill, that the sales being the first state, it wouldn't really make any difference to these companies?
Yep. And added to that, we had a an industry here, and they were bottlers here in Oregon, who would cease. I mean, they'd lose out and go out of business. So that was an addition in Oregon. Yeah, but those arguments are always there.
How did you vote on that issue, on the fluorocarbons?
I can't remember, but I have to guess that the odds were that I voted for it.
For the ban?
Yeah. But I can't remember that to be precisely accurate.
The session also enacted a massive new traffic code. Was that controversial?
I don't recall that it was. We were, remember way back, when I forgot what session, remember I told we rewrote the community college law? So there was rewritings. More often, most of it really was what term we use was housekeeping, to maybe edit, if you will, things, but and once in a while there'd be some insertions. This is interesting because many times when there was a desire to rewrite a law, put it in better form, edit, make it read a little bit better, maybe more understandable. Mm-hmm. But then every once in a while somebody wants something controversial. And so the whole idea was to keep the controversy out of it. Have that as another bill. Let's argue that separately. Mm-hmm. And let's move this other one along so that we would put our laws in good order. Sometimes that would work, sometimes it wouldn't. Most often it would. By that I mean keep the controversial issues, pluck them out, and make them separate bills. Mm-hmm. Then argue those. Mm-hmm. I don't think that was controversial. I think it was just a recodification, I guess maybe is another word of saying it.
Going back to a couple other the issues that we had talked about earlier, legislature refused to expand the state condemnation powers for the Willamette Greenway system. Do you recall the issues around that?
Yeah, condemnation is just one that most legislators, until you get to the very liberal, really are very shy about extending authority to do condemnation. It's just a process that we nobody really likes. Mm-hmm. Really, what condemnation really means is that with those that have that authority, which incidentally, public utilities have it, which is unusual, mm-hmm. to be outside a public body that has that authority. But I have a piece of property and you want to run a road through my property and your government, and so you try to bargain with me and I don't agree, finally say, okay, we'll condemn, which means we'll go to court and let the court decide how much it's going to cost. And it's sort of like binding arbitration is what it really amounts to, only you take it to court. And so they don't really, even the highway department's had it for many years and they've, built a lot of roads, but they're always very, very cautious about condemning. Mm-hmm. They've done a lot of their work without condemnation because they just prefer not to. Mm-hmm. So to extend the authority for condemnation is something that the legislature has always been very, very reluctant to do. Well, all I was going to add that you add that then to those that didn't want a greenway.
Right. Right. And why would people have been opposed to the greenway?
Well, it's just telling, we're back to the Westerner, this is my property, and by God, nobody's going to tell me what to do with it. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we hit it. We hit on another one. You remember, and that was legal protection for people. If the public was going to trust the property. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's all mixed up in the same package.
Do you feel that the Willamette Greenway has been successful in its attempt to preserve the shores of the Willamette River?
Yeah, I think it has. The question really though is who benefits? Who really is the beneficiary of it? The beneficiary of a Willamette Greenway is anyone that's going to go up and down the river. And how many Oregonians go up and down the river? Not very many. Some canoeists, people with motorboats, some commercial traffic.
Wasn't there a part of the plan to put a pathway along the bank?
Yeah.
How far did that get?
I don't know. I can't tell you that. But still, it's beneficial if for no other reason than to I'm trying to think of the term I want to use.
Riparian zones?
Riparian habitat to maintaining the banks. It's helpful in that context. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Helpful in the context of aiding spawning, aiding fishery, that sort of thing. So there's some side benefits to it.
Mm-hmm. We just talked about the bottle bill, and the legislature failed to extend in this session the state's famous no return bottle bill to other forms of grocery containers. Why was that?
There wasn't really a good definition of what they were talking about. But think about that for a minute. The initial concept of the bottle bill was that there was litter, and you want to avoid litter. And you find very few ketchup bottles alongside the freeway, or mustard bottles, or whatever else comes in bottles, mm-hmm. or jars. So you couldn't apply the litter theory to this extension they were talking about.
Wasn't there an issue, and I'm not sure if it was this point or maybe later, about wine coolers and some of these other beverages?
That was later.
That was later.
Yeah. Because mm-hmm. the container had been trying to add mm-hmm. something to it. I recall vaguely now that I was trying to find out, you know, now what's in this bill? I'm asking the question. What's in there? I mean, what's now covered by this? We really didn't get a good definition, and you couldn't apply litter to this one, and there was just a reluctance to extend it.
Mm-hmm. There is a spanking bill in the legislature that session that died in the closing hours of the session would have banned corporal punishment.
Oh, by teachers?
Yeah.
Yeah. We really get into a lot of things, don't we? I remember I told you that, you know, we live peacefully for 18 months and then the legislature comes into session and everything's wrong with the state. And so we go through our gyration for 6-7 months and then adjourn, and for the next year and a half everything's hunky-dunky. You know, you try to address problems that are the major problems.
Right.
This is not a major problem, hasn't been. Mm-hmm. Maybe in the territorial days or around 1875, you know, maybe that might have been a bill that was worthwhile. But there wasn't much of it. It comes back to the same thing as, I'm sure they had an example of some teacher pounding on some youngster, but that comes in under the heading of hard cases make bad law. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those things that really wasn't necessary to make another law for.
What was your assessment of this session? The 75 session, how did you feel about it?
Well, you asked me that before, and I really have not made a great deal of judgment. Most of our assessments were political. You know, mm-hmm. if the Democrats had control, they had a lousy session, and which they mostly, and the Democrats would say it was a great one. There wasn't too much assessments. Business may say it was a good one for business, or labor would say it's a good one for labor. I can't really remember. Mm-hmm.
Were you on any interim committees?
No, I don't recall it being.
And there was a special session in September of that year. Do you recall the things that the legislature took up during that time? Was that the tax? No, that came later.
No, I think the tax one was Straub in 1978.
Right, with the Son of Six and all that.
Yeah. Special session.
On September 16th.
I don't know. I can't remember.
I usually have a little more down here on these, but...
You don't have what it was for?
No.
I think I have something that might tell us, if I can find it.
Well, you were able to determine that it had something to do with the access to criminal records, but we really don't have any more information than that.
What else happened
during the interim period? Were there any other issues regarding the legislature or anything else that came up for you, either personally or in reference to the legislature?
No, nothing of any great moment. It is kind of interesting. I can't really remember, but I know that it was interesting to me that having run in 74 and beaten Bob Straub, and now I'm back in the Senate sitting up there listening to the new governor. It's interesting. Again, without any real, pangs of any kind, no anger of any kind. I told you I like Bob Straub, and I do.
Having run for governor, did you, how did that affect your own position in the legislature?
Oh, I think it was an elevation. Mm-hmm. They didn't necessarily treat me with any particular respect, but I'm sure it didn't hurt. And it was interesting, I was recounting it the other day, it would be late February, early March, that's when George Chester usually takes place. And I went down to Dorchester. I always really remember that because on Friday night I walked in the hall there, the people are all gathered, usually there's a main speaker, of some kind, that's the general setup. So anyway, they were introducing elected officials and candidates or people that were going to, well, let's say there wouldn't have been candidates then, 2 years later there would be. Anyway, they introduced me. I got a tremendous ovation. Mm. Really, it was very warm, very good. And my friend Wally Carson was with me. And he turned, he says, "You didn't win, you lost. how come they're doing this? You didn't win." I remember that.
Well, going on to the 77 legislative session, which was the second longest, 177 days to this point, the 59th Assembly, how did the House and Senate change after that election? You didn't have an election.
No, I ran in
76. 70. You ran in 76?
Uh-huh.
Then you would have had an election for this prior to the 77 session. I thought you ran.
That's right. No, I ran in 1976 for my Senate seat.
Uh-huh.
And won it.
Mm-hmm. There was no one contesting you, or?
I can't remember, but it wasn't
significant.
No.
And the leadership of the House was the Speaker was Phil Lang, and the Minority Leader was Roger Martin. And in the Senate, of course, you were the Republican leader, and Jason Bowe was the Senate President. So there really wasn't much to change there, was
That's
there?
That's right. Yeah.
In terms of the balance, how did the Republicans fare from that previous election? Did they gain at all? And
I just can't remember. Mm-hmm. Let's see. We had I don't know. I think we may have gained a couple, I don't recall that, but we're still a considerable minority.
Yeah. I noticed that you made a comment in reference to the committee assignments that were given out. You said that you were basically pleased with the assignment and that you got better treatment in the Senate than they did in the House.
Yeah.
Why was that? Was the House a more contentious atmosphere?
No, what actually happened, all the years that I was there running through let's see now, let me think about this a second. 64, 68, through 68, that would be the Democrats elected Speaker. In 64, the Republicans took over. Monty Montgomery was chair, and then that, now I'm running through his term, which had been 64 and 66. Mm-hmm. All through that period of time, They were fairly even-handed. Republicans in the Senate got a lot of committee chairs, good assignments as a result of coalition. But the House, you know, they when there was someone that was well-equipped, and partisan, in other words, partisan assignment for committee chair was not that intense. Mm-hmm. Then starting in 1968, Bob Smith became Speaker of the House. And for the very first time, bang, only Republicans, no Democrats. Well, now that you see that, that then cast a new spell over the entire body.
Was that a policy that Bob Smith put in place?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that was a mistake?
Yes.
And then when the Democrats got back into control, then they reciprocated.
That's right.
The same.
Exactly. And that carried, well, of course, then the Democrats became stronger in the Senate, and that's all she wrote, really. Mm-hmm. That's what, so that things changed after Bob. Mm-hmm. Good friend of mine, he ran a good ship, was a good speaker, but that was a dramatic change that he instituted.
The assignments that you had, you were on trade and economic development. Mike Thorne was, I believe, chair of that. Was there legislation in that term that either you sponsored or issues that you dealt with in terms of trade and economic development?
Again, I can't recall, but let me. I think it's a good time to make a comment. The whole matter of international trade, mm-hmm. for which I'm noted as a governor, really Jason Bow was the one that really cranked that whole thing up. He was quite interested in dealing internationally, and I have to credit Jason Bow for being the one that really got us thinking internationally at the very outset. Mm-hmm. Now, what year that was, I can't recall. You know, whether it was, I don't remember. But Jason, I have to give credit for really cranking that whole concept and thought about international trade.
He later then became a lobbyist for, was it Taiwan or Korea?
Taiwan. Mainly, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But he's really the one that kind of created that at the outset. I thought it was a good idea. Many thought it was, you know, Jason's trying to get some overseas trips, which really wasn't true. But, you know, there was this kind of jealousy, I presume, mm-hmm. or still provincialism that Oregon held. But specifically, I don't recall. There may have been, yeah, unless you have a list of bills that might jog my memory, I don't know.
Well, I do have a list of bills, and I'm scanning them. But I don't see anything in regards to international trade. I do see a couple things here dealing with taxes, but I doubt if that would have been in your also, there was you were on environment and energy. Ed Fadley was the chair there.
Couldn't get away from him, could I?
I wasn't going to say anything, but actually, it is quite a...
Well, there were two committees that I was on consistently, mm-hmm. and one was environment and land use. We started off by calling Air and Water Quality Control Committee,
right.
And the other was tax. I would have been on education all the way through, for the exception that I told you that when it came to, I said, is Ed going to be chairman? Yes. If he's going to be chairman, I don't want to be on it. So I was consistently on those committees, though.
You did have one bill in that committee that I found. It was Senate Bill 763 requiring the Motor Vehicles Division to include violations of fuel conservation maximum speed limit in abstracts of driving records that are available to the public. That was left in committee.
Ah, now you jog my memory. Let's go back to the bill about the rewriting the motor vehicle code.
Yes.
I'll have to confess that I didn't read that in its entirety, which is usually these rewrites are pretty voluminous. So I was still operating under the theory that if you were convicted or caught for speed, mm-hmm. that would not show on your insurance record. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I was opposed to increasing the speed limit over 55 through all the term I was governor, the same thing. And my whole motive was traffic safety. However, I discovered afterward, matter of fact, I then was talking to my barber or somebody, that this is no longer of note in your insurance records. I said, what? Can't be. No, I said, that's true. Yeah, can't be. Yeah, you guys did something down there. And so this is now to restore that.
I see.
Didn't get away with it.
What was the reason for obstructing it from leaving the committee or voting it? I presume that by...
It didn't get anywhere.
It didn't get anywhere. No, it was left in committee.
Yeah.
So in... I presume that Ed Fadeley, no, I guess this was Cook that was, no, Fadeley, that's right. Did he then just put it down the agenda far enough that the committee couldn't get to it?
I don't recall how it uh-huh. died, whether it was, but there was the thought among those that wanted to go faster that this is merely an energy conservation, not traffic safety. And in 55, you get more mileage, you on a gallon of gas, you go further. So the fact that you went 65 still was not a traffic hazard. Mm-hmm. And so why should you be noted in your insurance records that you went over the 55? It doesn't make it, you know, it's strictly for another purpose, not from traffic safety. I always came from traffic safety, and I always figured if you go over 55. Actually, when I say that to you, I still remember in one of my campaigns, a big burly guy in a sawmill, and he was standing there, and I said, oh, come on, you don't change the law. You go 55 miles an hour. We ought to be able to go faster. And he was on my case, and I said to him, do you drive 55? No. I said, well, what are you complaining about? and the point, basically, if it's 55, they're going to drive 63. Mm-hmm. If it's 65, they're going to drive 73. I mean, that's just the nature of it. And so I knew they weren't going 55. I traveled the freeway enough to know that. But they weren't going 73, or when it was 70 at one time, they were going 80. Mm-hmm. And... So I knew that they were going faster than 55. So when you move it up a notch, and they're going to be beyond that notch, whatever that notch happens to be. Anyway, they got what they wanted, and they were about to let go. So those are battles you fight.
You were also on revenue and school finance, of course, and. You had a bill there which requires the legislature, not the superintendent of public instruction, to set mileage rate for basic school support fund, and that was left in committee as well. What was your intent there?
I had worried my way, then carried on actually through, even to when I finally proposed a bill of the increase in basic schools in the cost of property taxes. And we had constantly given, meaning the state, general fund money for what we call basic school support. So in addition to property taxes, there was income tax dollars going to schools. And we're always dealing with a formula as to how that was going to be distributed, but that was not basically the point. The problem was that